Welcome to the Ministry Collaborative Podcast,
an ongoing conversation
with ministry leaders
about embracing complexity
and uncertainty
with joy and faithfulness. Hello, everyone. This is Jennifer Watley Maxell, and welcome to the podcast. I am just so excited and thrilled to have my friend, my colleague, my former professor, Asa Lee, here with us today. He is the president of Pittsburgh Seminary, where I am actually working on my Doctor of Ministry currently. And one of the reasons why I wanted to have this conversation with him is because he is someone that I have come to know as one who embodies courageous leadership. And I don't know about you all out there, but just these times culturally in the church, just everything that's going on, I feel like we are at a need more than ever for courageous leaders and those who can exercise courageous leadership. So I thought this would be a great conversation for us to have. Asa, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Jennifer. Glad to be here. I'm glad to share from my experience and wisdom.
So now you've been at Pittsburgh for, it hasn't even been 2 years yet, has it?
It has. This is the start of my third year.
Wow, really? Already?
Time flies when you're having fun.
It surely does.
Or doing work.
Exactly. So how's it been going so far?
Pittsburgh Seminary is a great place. It is well situated, and Pittsburgh is an interesting town. It is not the smoke and steel plants of old. It is a resurgent city trying to find its way in the 21st century with new industries and all that. And the seminary is positioned both in an urban context, but also within 10 minutes of rural contexts that make understanding ministry and figuring out what the edges of ministry are really exciting. So it's been a joy to get to know both the context for my ministry here, but also getting to know what the edge of the seminary's growth needs to be. So that's been an exciting journey we've been on.
Well, I will say coming to Pittsburgh through Ministry Collaborative and our partnership with the doctoral program, I've been very pleasantly surprised by Pittsburgh Seminary and by Pittsburgh, the city. I had never been there until I came for class, and I definitely enjoyed my time there. Look forward to spending time there in the future. So now coming in over 2 years ago, now three, as you just said, you coming in, particularly as the first African-American president of the seminary who is not Presbyterian, you're coming from some different places than the former presidents. What were some of the places or ways that you found yourself having to show up courageously as a leader in that context?
Yeah, so I think one of the most obvious things that we often miss, because we think of courage as being sort of this ability within, like your gut, and being able to lead from a place of competence or what have you. And courage sometimes is doing something scared. Sometimes courage is risking in a place that you may have been before, but not in that context. So you may have led in a way before, but now you're in a different space, and what you did in the previous space doesn't necessarily mean the same thing in the new space. And all those are aspects of courage. But one of the big ones that we often overlook, but is right in our face, is showing up in your body. And so if you are a woman in leadership that has never had a woman in leadership, if you are a transgendered person, if you are an African-American or an ethnic minority of some kind, leading in these spaces courageously means you physically walk in the room.
Right.
And that in and of itself is the act of courage. And for me, it was all of those things. It is things that I've done previously in higher ed, higher theological education, I'm now having to deploy here at PTS. But what worked in my previous context and was relatively insignificant or normal is extraordinary in some cases. But also showing up as the first African-American in 230 years of the seminary's history, as well as, and I think more controversially, the first non-Presbyterian showing up in this space, means that my body, my presence, my physical presence reminds people of the risk that the institution has taken.
Yes.
And so getting up and saying what any other president says hits differently when I say it. And being able to recognize that as an act of courage. So I say that to say, in that instance, when you're talking about showing up in your body, just being yourself is the act of courage.
Yes.
And I think at a base level, we miss that because ordination processes and often limit our ability to be authentic because we got to get through the ordination exam. So we got to conform to a certain standard so that now when we end up in our context, we're not ourselves.
Right.
And we then lose the opportunity to be courageous in those spaces.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to that in so many ways in certain spaces, particularly in this last 3 or 4 years that I have been called to show up in. And, you know, walking in the room and just, it's kind of like you kind of walk around and look in around and you're like, uh-oh, like, yep. Okay, well, we're here now.
Yep.
So now tell me this, what are some of the things that you have done that you would counsel those who may be listening who are finding themselves having to show up courageously? What does that work look like, getting yourself prepared to step into spaces and to show up as fully yourself, as a full embodiment of yourself?
So I think the most important thing happens before you even show up in the space, and that is understanding who you are and what you offer. And I think this is something we say a lot, but we don't really give people tools to mind themselves, right? Mm-hmm. Knowing your strengths, and more importantly, knowing what you don't do. Mm. I think in creating the boundaries for yourself, you now understand what to say no to. Mm-hmm. It isn't what you say yes that matters. It's the no's that you say that creates the space for you to define yourself. No is a limiting word. Mm-hmm. And so when you say no to something because it doesn't fit your call or doesn't fit your gifting or doesn't fit the skill sets you have, you're defining yourself. And so we teach people to kind of absorb and to explore and all that, but we don't necessarily give them the tools to really understand how to limit and define the boundaries of who they are. That has to happen before you show up in a ministry context. Mm-hmm. Because when you show up in the ministry context, the context is going to demand all of you, even the things that you don't have. Mm-hmm. Because our previous leader had X. Why aren't you doing that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, because that's not who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And that right there is an act of courage. Think about it like this. Saying no is the beginning of every single revolution. And no is a defining element. What defines the revolution is when we say no new taxes. Mm-hmm. No, we will not be slaves. No, we will not live under the thumb of a king anymore. Right. These are all limiting propositions. These are propositions that define who you are. So in the process, understanding who you are means when you walk in the space, when all of the onslaught happens, you're already prepared because the first thing you know is who you are. That's first. Second, and it seems like it's redundant, you lead from who you are.
Mm-hmm.
You don't lead from, and I'm just going to say it, you don't lead from a John Maxwell book or some other book you may have read. I'm not picking on John Maxwell. I'm just saying mm-hmm. that's one of the popular things that we often do. I read this in Maxwell. I read this in this or that. No. Trust your own voice. Trust your own instinct. Doesn't mean you don't take counsel. What it means is your body tells you things when you are leading on the edge.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're leading on the edge, what is your body reacting to? How are you experiencing what's going on in the room? Trust that instinct and then lead from that place. And courage also, lastly, courage also means recognizing that you don't know everything.
Mm-hmm.
Courage often means saying, you know, I need someone else to come with me out on this ledge. And finding help in the middle of the fight is always important.
Yeah. And I think in this moment in time, the three principles that you've lifted are really important because I do think we have access to so much information. We do kind of live in a time where in a lot of situations, kind of anything goes and, you know, it's this, yeah, let's try everything. Let's throw everything up against the wall and see if it sticks. And, you know, let's hold all things, you know, and try to be all things to all people. And I really love this idea of, as you were talking, what the phrase that came to mind was kind of stewarding your no,
mm-hmm.
using your no as a tool in your leadership arsenal. And I think it's a very courageous thing because so many times, particularly when you're new in a situation, that's the thing you don't want to say because people get upset when we say no and people get in their feelings when we say no. And so I think just this realization that part of what is required is for us to take the risk. And I think that last point you made about finding help, particularly because so many clergy persons are relatively isolated.
Yep.
We may be, you know, isolated within our denomination or just feeling unprepared for the task that is currently in front of us. So when we talk about courageous leadership and finding help and finding people to come alongside and support and allies, what are some things that you've done in your role, this current role or in past roles, to kind of find those people and those resources?
So I've been blessed. I mean, the gut, if I talk about gut instinct, I've been blessed with a strong sense of being able to kind of size up people. and their gifting. Mm-hmm. I'm also very, very slow about picking who walks with me on the journey. Mm-hmm. An old adage that came from the chair of the board of my previous institution, who's now a United Methodist bishop, and he would say this all the time, the single most important thing you do as a leader is pick who's on your team. Because you're investing in yourself mm-hmm. when you pick people who are close to you. Mm-hmm. And so you cannot be led by anxiety when you're picking people who are going to be close to you. You must be led from an authentic place. So what I have done is painfully, I'm often known as a person that sizes up a situation, makes a decision. But when it comes to choosing people for the team, I am very slow, mm-hmm. uncharacteristically so, unnervingly so, frustratingly so. But I do that because it's a discernment process. Mm-hmm. Because the worst thing you can do is terminate somebody or mm-hmm. let somebody go. And that is a painful work.
Yes.
So I don't want that. So that means before I even do a search for anybody, what are the characteristics I need to do this thing? Mm-hmm. If I'm looking to lead with risk, who can I trust most intimately to walk alongside me? Mm-hmm. And that takes internal time before you even put it on a piece of paper for a position description. Mm-hmm. So taking that time to do that, whether it's prayer, fasting, whatever, do whatever you got to do to take that time so that when you go out, you know it when you see it. And be patient because it may not come in 2 weeks. And the first 6 dozen resumes you get are not it. Mm-hmm. And so you may have to go to the last 3 that you get. So picking somebody on your team is really important. And it starts internally. For me, in every position I've ever had, when I've picked people, those people have either excelled and left me. That means they've gone on to better things. Mm-hmm. Or when I left them, they were still in place. And that's not in a bad sense. They were such a good fit that they stayed and were able to be anchored in that place because their gifts match that community. Mm-hmm. And I see that as a sign of a good discernment process. Mm-hmm. But you have to be what Edwin Friedman calls self-differentiated mm-hmm. enough to not be bound by wanting to be mentors to people and wanting them to come to you or be in competition with the people you choose. Mm-hmm. There's no time for any of that kind of stuff mm-hmm. because your energy as a leader is really pushing the edge and you need people that are going to push you so you push the edge.
One of the things that I really like that you're talking about, a couple of things you said. One is trusting your gifting. And I think that particularly for leaders who have been in positions for a long time, that's an ongoing work of discernment. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes us not doing that, resting on what worked for us or what was our strong suit kind of when we came into a call 5 years, 10 years, whatever ago, instead of really like, okay, where is Spirit leading me? What has been cultivated in me? And then being able to trust that, know what that is, and then trust that is so important. The other thing I love is this idea of going slow, particularly when we may be coming into a season or a new position where there may be pressure in the system or in the context to get it going. You know, a lot of times when we come into places, there's been a process and they finally found you and they're excited to have you. And now they want you to get your team so you can get going. So I think even having the courage to set your own pace and say, I know you want me to fill all these positions and I know you want to get this thing going, but there's a work that has to be done. I have to be able to discern some things and to feel empowered to take that risk. And the one thing that you said that just really hit me was this idea of not being led by anxiety. There is so much anxiety right now everywhere. Mm-hmm. I think all of us as individuals are wrestling with anxiety in ways that we never have before. Culturally, there's so many things that are happening strictly as a result of anxiety in our culture, in systems that we're in. And so what are some of the ways that you've been able to help yourself and those that you lead to not be led by anxiety?
So the word itself produces anxiety. When you start talking about, you know, there's anxiety in the system. Oh, we're, they get this picture of freneticism. Mm-hmm. But I use the word anxiety much like systems theorists talk about. Anxiety is just energy. It's energy in the system. And anxiety manifests itself with freneticism. Sometimes it manifests itself with lethargy. I mean, there are all different ways in which the anxiety, the energy manifests itself. Again, it comes back to self. The way that I've tried to manage the institution's anxiety is by first managing my own. Mm-hmm. And that means creating spaces outside of the institution, multiple spaces in which I can exercise self-healing practices, releasing practices. So gardening is a thing. Mm-hmm. Many folks know that Legos are a thing for me. I'm currently in the middle of a 9,000 piece Titanic build right now because this academic year was pretty intense. So that allows me to show up in the space, in this office, in a space that is non-anxious, that my energy is directed not to my own concerns, but rather how can I lead this institution in the ways that the institution needs me to lead. Mm-hmm. Second, sometimes you're called to absorb the energy as a leader. Other times you're charged with reflecting the energy. And too many times, particularly pastoral leaders, people who are serving in parish ministries, but not only them, they think their job is to absorb all the energy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the church is all ablaze. It's all on me. It's all on me. I'm the only person. It's all on me. And it's like, hold it. No. Some of this energy is caused by that one family that has been causing all sorts of craziness. And then the question is, instead of being a lead block absorbing the energy, how do I become a mirror and push that energy back to them? Mm-hmm. And so as a leader in this context, I have taught the folks around me the importance of not managing individuals' anxiety, but managing the institution's anxiety.
Yes.
Because in many cases, what shows up as institutional energy is actually one person's energy being spread across the whole institution. Mm-hmm. And so being able to discern the difference and being able to say, what do I need to be in this moment? And what you'll discover is you're freer as a leader and less anxious when you understand that most of the time you're a mirror and not a lead block. Mm-hmm. That's the important piece. How can I be a mirror here? And that's courageous in and of itself, particularly if you've had leaders in the past who are accustomed to being the lead block. Oh, give it to me, I'll handle it. Give it to me, I'll handle it. I'm the kind of leader who says, okay, what does that have to do with me? Mm-hmm. Okay, it has nothing to do with me. So why don't you go back and do what you need to do? And when you're ready, we'll figure this out. That's an important strategy that has always served me well, but it also means I have to be non-anxious. I have to find spaces and places that I process my own anxiety and get that out so I can do that work when I need to.
I love it. I love it. And I think that's such a great place for us to kind of fall at the end of this conversation. And thank you for the practical tips and strategies you've given us as we try to be courageous leaders. Real quick, before we leave, what are some of the things that are going on at PTS that we need to be looking out for?
So PTS was the recipient of a $1.25 million grant from the Lilly Endowment to develop a network for faith-forming families called the F3 Network. It's part of the Lilly Endowment's child care and parenting initiative. So this is a big opportunity for us to kind of shape the communities of Western Pennsylvania and Pittsburgh here. We've also launched the Pittsburgh Seminary Collaborative, which is a collaboration of six of our programmatic areas that are going to be doing external relations with church partners, parachurch partners, nonprofits in and around the world. A lot of them based here in Western PA, but some of them are across the country and global. These are already existing programs, but we're now looking at a concentrated effort of being an external resourcing partner to these folks. And we're doing all this while we're also keeping our traditional degree programs, although we this fall will be launching a hybrid modality in which you can essentially take your seminary courses wherever you are in the country, and you only have to come to Pittsburgh four times an academic year to experience the communal life here in Pittsburgh. But you might be, we have students now coming from Arkansas and from Texas and from New York and from California. We've now made our programming more accessible. So these are some big things we're doing, but they're exciting things. So I encourage anybody that's interested in resourcing themselves, check us out. We'd be glad to have you.
Well, thank you so much. This is awesome. It's so great to hear all the exciting things that are going there. Thank you so much for your time and for sharing with us. And I will definitely be seeing you around the kingdom.
Amen. Thank you. And thanks to the Ministry Collaborative.
Thank you for listening to the Ministry Collaborative podcast,
a project of the Macedonian Ministry Foundation.
The Ministry Collaborative nurtures a national network
of pastors and congregations
committed to faithful,
creative,
and courageous engagement in their communities.
Our producer is Marthane Sanders.
To find out more about our work of cultivating leadership that makes a difference
in congregations and communities,
visit our website
at www.ministrycollaborative.org.